You are watching Game Time Decisions. I am Gabriel Morenz, who up to the program that puts its money where its fantasies are on the Fantasy Sports Network. Let's do this thing. We've got a great show lined up for you this afternoon. Mike Cardano steps up and in. Dave Malinsky joins us straight from the Strip in Las Vegas, Nevada. Emery Hunt joins us, footballgameplan.com's Emery Hunt. He was on the sidelines last night for the debacle that was the New York Giant football game, but it was anything but a debacle if you are the Detroit Lions, and the Detroit Lions are now just one of five teams out of 32 teams in the National Football League who are 2-0 against the spread. Although, truth be told, I don't think they're going to be 3-0 against the spread. Lions are taking on the Atlanta Falcons in week three. We've got a couple of quality matchups on the board. We're going to be breaking it down. We're talking NFL football on the program today. We've got some great guests. Dave Malinsky's going to throw it down straight from the Strip in Las Vegas at Nevada. Emery Hunt, this guy's the best. Emery Hunt, he breaks down the college of football, high school football, arena football, and NFL football. We're talking NFL football on the program today. We're going to hit some college later in the week with Joe Lisi, as we've been killing it, man, on college football today, every Saturday morning, 9 o'clock right here on the Fantasy Sports Television Network. So we got no football on the board this evening, so we got some baseball picks for you. You know what? Every time, like, there's no football on the board, I go through, like, football withdrawals. But the Major League Baseball postseason is right around the corner. It's hard to believe, man, but September's nearly done. September's nearly done. September is as done as the New York Giants season is right now. Or the Cincinnati Bengals season. We can go down the list. It's amazing how many team seasons are already basically ruined, like, out of the gate. You know, you go 0-2, you have an 11% chance of making the playoffs. So maybe one of these sorry-ass teams that have an 0-2 record will be able to make it. Last year, one team made it that was 0-2. So, you know, generally 11%. And there's a lot of these teams going to be staring down 0-3 coming up. Cincinnati Bengals, are they beating the Green Bay Packers on the road? Are the New York Giants going to beat the Philadelphia Eagles? The Eagles are laying 6 points in this football game. So, with all the football stuff that's been going on, we have not had an opportunity to give you our take on the Triple G Canelo fight that was scored a draw. Now, we heard all throughout the summer from Oscar De La Hoya and many boxing purists that the Floyd Mayweather fight against Conor McGregor was a black eye to the sport of boxing, that somehow that was a disgrace. So much so that Oscar De La Hoya actually tweeted these guys the night of the fight, and he said, "You're freaking disgraces to the sport of boxing." And instead of just shutting up and realizing that when everybody talked about Conor and Floyd, everybody said, "Well, man, you got a real great fight coming up after this." Well, Triple G and Canelo. You know, the Conor-Floyd stuff really was a free infomercial for what was billed as, you know, a real boxing match. And it's ironic, isn't it? As Oscar De La Hoya called the Conor and Floyd fight a freaking circus. Well, in the end, at least their fight wasn't fixed. Now, when I say fixed, you know, fixed is a pretty strong word. But, you know, what other word is there to say right now? Now, you know, the fight was a debacle on Saturday night, and it had nothing to do with the fighters. Both fighters brought it. It was epic. It was as advertised, okay? It was as advertised. You know, the lead up to the fight was great. Both fighters were respectful. You know, the countdown, the way they marketed it was brilliant. The old school pugilists. They even said, "We don't need to talk smack about each other. We respect each other, but we know, you know, we're both the best in the world." You know, they did everything perfectly. The fight itself was entertaining as hell. But unfortunately, they can't help themselves, all right? They can't help themselves. They're like some dude that's walking down the street and he sees like a car door open and, you know, and he sees the keys inside. He can't help himself. And the next thing you know, he's on reality television's bait car. You know, some people can't help themselves. You know, the greed factor is just too much. Now, listen, everybody's calling out Adelaide Byrd, and with good reason. Adelaide Byrd is a terrible judge. She always has been. She always will be. But with that being stated, I'm starting to think, like, how the hell could she score this 118-110? I don't think she's corrupt. I don't think she's getting paid off. They investigate this stuff, all right? She's a judge with the Nevada State Athletic Commission. They're checking her bank accounts. You know, you got FBI and stuff on top of this. You know, they take that stuff very, very seriously. So I don't think suddenly, oh, Adelaide Byrd got a $2 million deposit in her bank account, but I don't know, man. You know, the only way she could score this 118-110 is if, like, some Mexican cartel basically put a gun to her head and said, we're going to kill you and your family unless you give us the score. If the fight's not going well, you better save us. Like, I have no other explanation. But listen, Adelaide Byrd's an easy target. You know, probably because partly because she's a woman, and she is bad. So it's not sexist to criticize Adelaide Byrd. She's freaking terrible. She, like, you know, she's as bad as bad. Like, basically, I don't know, like, I was going to say she's the Eli Manning of judging, but Eli Manning's actually won a couple of times. I don't know how, but he did. So Adelaide Byrd's not the only one. What about Judge Trella? Trella had it 114-114. It's all a lot like the healthcare debacle stuff. John McCain always gets blamed for blocking the repeal, but really it was Murkowski and Collins as well. It wasn't just McCain. So my point is, it wasn't just Adelaide Byrd. It was Trella as well. And I don't know how the hell you score this 114-114. Now, listen, I was doing a podcast during the fight, and I was watching a million college football games during the fight as well, so it's hard for me to definitively tell you this is what the final score was, this is what the scorecard should be, but I watched every round. You know, Triple G won, what, 8 rounds? If you want to be really generous, you can say 7-5. Yeah, Canelo landed some power punches, but anybody that watched that fight that is sane knows that the better fighter was the Kazakhstani fighter. All right, but once again, anybody that has been following boxing knows it just is what it is. All right, you know, I was watching the Buffalo Bills against Carolina Panthers on Sunday, and it was like deja vu, man. I felt like I was 14 years old watching the Buffalo Bills suck. Okay, I'm now 47 years old. So in other words, it's been 35 plus years of this crap. Some things just are, okay? The San Diego / LA Chargers losing games at the end of games, that just is. It ain't the young hoes problem. Nate Keating used to miss kicks too. My father, may he rest in peace, once told me, it is, it was, and it's going to be. And when he's talking about the sport of boxing and combat sports for that matter, my father was never so freaking right. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues.
Are you new to Daily Fantasy? Are you a veteran? Either way, you can better your chances of winning money, and lots of it, by going to DailyRoto.com. Multiple people have become millionaires thanks to the guys at Daily Roto. Why not take advice from the experts? You can become a millionaire too. Just go to DailyRoto.com to rock Daily Fantasy Sports.
Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morenz. We've got a great show lined up for you. Emery Hunt, footballgameplan.com, will join us. As I stated, he was looking sharp on the sidelines last night of the New York Giant-Detroit Lion football game, a lot sharper than the New York Giants' offense was. And how about Bob McAdoo throwing, like literally throwing, Eli Manning under the bus after the football game last night? Like, seriously, I think people could call the NYPD and state they just saw a dude with a bad haircut and a mustache push a goofy-looking kid under a bus in Manhattan, because that's what happened after the game last night. Mike Cardano's going to join us from the NYC, so we've got a great show lined up for you. Batting leadoff, Dave Malinsky. You can read his daily column, Vegas Point Blank, over at sportsbookreview.com. It's a great column. I read it every morning. Instead, I don't drink coffee, so I wake up in the morning, I read Dave's column instead. Dave Malinsky joins us. How you doing, Dave?
Would we be without coffee, you know, in our way? Keeping in mind that my coffee timer is set for about 5 a.m. each morning. That's what you got to do, though, to be ahead of the game.
Well, you've met me, Dave, and, you know, I'm not lacking for energy. And imagine, I don't drink coffee or energy drinks. Imagine that.
Well, what I haven't seen, though, I haven't seen you begin your days very often. I see you once you're pretty well oiled and once you're into the flow. I haven't seen that early morning, Gabe Morenzi.
I was pretty lathered up after the football game last night, the debacle, Dave, real torture. trying to get to 36 points, and I just couldn't do it. We saw it was amazing, my luck. Sometimes it's just not meant to be, but, you know, the New York Giants made a tackle, but, of course, the guy landed on top of the Giant player and rolled over for the first down and prevented me from getting that field goal.
You know, it is amazing, and you and I talk about this a lot on this show and on other shows. What actually goes into the creation of a point spread result? You know, for all the stats we study, all the matchups, all these various components, when you look at how so many of these games get decided, it does take some work to win, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's. I've said this before about football, and compared it. You can love something, but it doesn't mean it's always going to love you back. And I think the sport of football, betting on football, is a classic example of that, Dave.
Yeah, but if people have it in perspective, and that is the real key, have it in perspective, you can win at this stuff. The key is establish that perspective.
All right, so week one of the National Football League was one of the worst weeks of football that I've ever seen. Week two was a little bit better for some teams. But at the same point in time, and as you wrote about today, Dave, over at sportsbookreview.com, 13 teams in the National Football League. So all 32 teams played, 16 games. So out of 16 games played, 13 teams scored one touchdown or less in their football games, Dave. We're into week two right now. They go through four games of preseason. I get that they don't play much in the preseason, but they also went through a couple of weeks of camp before they played preseason. These teams have been together right now for 10 weeks, Dave. No more excuses about we're not in sync yet at this point in time. And you brought something up to me last night when we were talking in the late night hours. And I was thinking about this, and I brought this up as well. Everybody waits for that switch. Well, the Seahawks will flip the switch. You know, Eli Manning and the Giants will flick the switch. And they said, even Eli did the old chill out, everybody. It's one game. We're going to be fine tonight. Maybe there's no switch to be flicked, Dave, for the Cincinnati Bengals and the New York Giants of the world.
Well, if there were enough offensive linemen to go around, and we will not pound this into the ground because I know we've talked about this enough on this show, there is a big issue up front. But how about some more perspective, Gabe? There were four teams this year that don't have a touchdown through two games. The last five seasons combined, there were only four teams that matched that mark. When you get as many in one year as the previous five seasons, yeah, there is a real problem. But what happens in college football? Every year, more teams go to the spread offense, which means that the number of good offensive linemen and the number of NFL-ready quarterbacks, Gabe, it's going to keep declining, not getting any better. So if you're the Bengals, if you're the Giants, these offensive linemen you have right now, those are your guys. For the next 14 games, that's what you have to work with. Good luck trying to fix it.
I've watched a lot of bad Buffalo Bill football over the years, Dave, and I've pretty much seen every Buffalo Bills game since 1978/79. So imagine the amount of bad football that I've seen, with a little exception in the late 80s into the early 90s. But the offensive performance that I saw on Sunday was amongst the worst offensive performances that I've ever seen in a professional football game. You know, LeSean McCoy basically lost 2 yards on every time he touched the football. Tyrod Taylor, and the Buffalo Bills wide receiving corps is the most anemic passing attack maybe in the history of the National Football League. You wrote about it. Their long play was 15 yards. Before that, their long play was actually 13 yards, and it was on a broken play that Tyrod Taylor scrambled for. I know the Carolina Panthers have only given up 6 points through two football games, but that Buffalo Bill offense, Dave, it's bad, and everything went wrong for them in training camp with that concussion to Tyrod Taylor. Jordan Matthews, his first freaking practice, gets hurt, cracked his windpipe or whatever it was. We can go on and on, but it is Buffalo. It is what it is. It's like I'm just used to that. But you add it all up, you have one of the worst offenses in the National Football League taking on arguably the best defense in the National Football League this week. Is it just too easy to like the Denver Broncos here?
It would be if you knew Denver was going to bring their A game. But now here's your classic back and forth in the NFL. Denver opens with two really big home games. Monday night, national television division against the Chargers. Big showdown against the Cowboys. And they really wanted the Cowboy game when you read about their player and coach comments afterwards. So they could be a touch flat. But here's your problem with the Buffalo passing game. None of the wide receivers in the rotation were even with the team last year. So it's tough enough for a quarterback and receivers to get on the same page. But now it's a brand-new playbook that none of them have played in before. And look at how much time Taylor missed in August because of the concussion protocol. So now two games into the season, LeSean McCoy has caught as many passes as all Buffalo wide receivers combined. That's a problem. So who gets open against Denver? Yeah, you can make a case that Tlaib and Harris, as good a combination of cover corners as any to ever play in the NFL. So how does Buffalo get anybody open down the field?
And Dave, you know, I've been looking at this. It's weird this year. There's a lot of teams playing their first home game this weekend. You know, very strange, a big, strange dichotomy in which teams open up with two games on the road. The Denver Broncos, like the Rams, opened up with both their games at home. So they're going on the road for the first time. And then I look back, Dave, even into the preseason, the last two preseason games that the Broncos played, they were at home, Dave. You know, they haven't left. The last time the Denver Broncos left the city of Denver, essentially, was on August the 19th. So we're going back a little way. And I know they're not college kids, so they're not, they're going on a big road trip. But nevertheless, it's the National Football League. And Buffalo is a strange place to play, Dave. I'm a Bills fan. I've been to that stadium. It's just weird. There's a weird atmosphere there. It's very trailer park trash-ish. The fans are extremely wasted and just, it's a vulgar stadium. It just is, Dave.
And I'm sure that can have a little bit of impact. Because, again, Denver gets out of their comfort zone. And,
Hold, if you can, Dave. We got a little bit. Sounds like you're underwater right now suddenly. We're just going to hang up and call you right back here.
Okay, no problem.
I don't know. Now, of course, when he says no problem, it sounds clear. I don't know. Dave's in Nevada. Technology, man. Like, if I could flip this table, I would, but I can't. It's like, it's really locked down here, Warman. I really couldn't. Like, even if I flipped and, like, really lost it and wanted to flip this table, I couldn't. It's actually bothering me that I can't. Like, just that I don't have the option. Yeah, I don't have the option. It kind of bothers me a little bit. I'm going to have to bring, like, a saw or something. All right, Dave. All right, sorry, Dave. I don't know what happened. It sounded like you're a little bit underwater for a second. But, you know, I lived in a lot of places, Dave, I swear. Phone connections in Nevada are terrible. I think there's like three towers in the entire state of Nevada.
Well, it's because I think half of the lines are tapped by various federal agencies because of the amount of commercial traffic, let's say, that goes through here. But let's talk a little bit, Gabe, about what happens to teams like Denver when they take to the road. When you go west to east, not only do you have a long flight to Buffalo, but you lose a couple of hours in the time zone transition.
Yep.
Essentially, you have a day taken out of your life between the two-hour time zone and the travel time. And keep in mind, when Denver goes on the road, look, you got about an hour drive to get to the airport before you fly somewhere. Denver International is almost in western Kansas. So there are those added elements put in. So you lose that prep day. You're a little satisfied off the Dallas win. Denver's vulnerable this week. I just don't know if Buffalo can do anything about it.
Yeah, I know. It's a leap of faith to believe that the Buffalo Bills are going to be able to play well for 60 minutes, move the football successfully for 60 minutes. It is Trevor Siemian's first road start. So, that's always something to keep your eye on. All right, Dave. To live and die in L.A., and right now NFL football is dying in L.A., it's amazing to me the free pass that Roger Goodell gets, from the mainstream media. People talk about the deflate gates and some of the suspensions, but the lunacy and the insanity of the NFL owners to improve this stuff, to have not one but two teams go to Los Angeles, and, the USC-Texas game, as you wrote, Dave, had more people at that game than the Rams and the Chargers did combined over the weekend. Yet I want to note, you know, USC in a Reggie Bush and a Liner and a Pete Carroll era there, they used to average 89,000 fans a game. Last year, they averaged 69,000 fans a game. So there's been a drop-off even at the collegiate level. And I know they got 84, 85 for the Texas game, but there were a ton of Texas fans at that football game. I don't know if it's a change in demographic of Los Angeles, and maybe it's just, you know, the numbers just aren't what they used to be. But this is a sheer embarrassment. It's an embarrassment for the Chargers, and it should be an embarrassment to the National Football League as well. And Melvin Gordon said after the game, he said, well, it was kind of like a 50-50 split. He goes, I'd say half the fans were going for the Dolphins. Yeah, that's a neutral field right there. What happens when the Chiefs roll in there or when the Raiders play there? The Raiders, it's going to be like a Raiders home game, Dave. There's still Raider fans in L.A. They're going to take that stadium over.
Well, let's put some perspective into it. We can blame the NFL, but let's blame and let's enjoy the Spanos family. Because you know what? Los Angeles was not clamoring for the Chargers. What Spanos was trying to do is get some leverage to get a new stadium in San Diego. And what they did is they put it up properly. There was a voter referendum in San Diego last November. Do you want public financing for a new Charger stadium? And the voter said, no, take a hike. You've got the money. You build your own stadium. We won't do it for you. So Spanos is now stuck in limbo in Los Angeles with a team that, or a city that doesn't care about the Chargers whatsoever. They're going to be stuck there for several years until the new stadium gets built. And even then, I'm not sure the Chargers ever develop a following. Because keep in mind, Gabe, if you're a Kansas City fan or a Denver fan, L.A. for a weekend can be fun. So you're going to see a lot of Kansas City people out there this week. Even when the new stadium gets built, Chargers are going to be 50-50 a lot of weeks because people will enjoy taking that road trip.
They should just move back to San Diego. It's like a couple that breaks up and they get divorced, you know, and they realize we made a mistake. All right, like, let's just both swallow our egos here and get on with this. Because, yeah, it's not going to end well. It just isn't. And the Chiefs are laying 3 in this football game. All right, Dave, so before we get you out of here, we got Michigan and Purdue. And it's funny how quickly people's opinions change in the football world, isn't it, Dave? And in the betting world as well. From week one, in which Purdue were a laughing stock, nobody was talking about Brohm. It was sort of just an afterthought. You know, they hang around with Louisville getting 25 points. Week two, a lot of so-called sharps talking about how great Frank Solich is and the Ohio Bobcats and this and that. I stepped up to the window and I said, man, I'll lay 3 points for Purdue against a MAC team any day of the week. They smash them. I jumped on board last week with Purdue. They smashed them. Yeah, and it could have been worse, but, you know, they smashed Missouri on the road. Now they're getting 10 at home, and it seems like every capper out there and every guy that does shows like this, they all love Purdue because Purdue right now is 3-0 against the number.
And this is where the adjustments get to be a little bit too far. If this had been the opening game of the season, this line's in the 20s. Because even when Purdue played Louisville over at Indianapolis week one, the game closed at 25. Here's where Michigan's underrated a little bit, Gabe. They've been in the red zone 10 times this year. They only got one touchdown. That's kind of a fluky, I think, aberrational stat for that quality of program. If they would just score touchdowns on half of those possessions, you add 16 points to the total. That's 5.3 points per game. How much difference does Michigan look just adding those almost 5.5 points a game? So I think they've probably shortened this line up a little bit too much. If it dips under 10 over the course of the week, I'll put a little Michigan in pocket. And here's what I'm going to do before the week's out. I'm going to try to talk to an NFL scout and say, okay, let's do this. Let's line up the 22 Purdue starters. Let's line up the 22 Michigan starters. Does Michigan have the better player at every position on the field? And from a talent standpoint, that might actually still be true.
You know, Dave, we've got to get out of here, but people are down on Michigan after the last 2 weeks, the performances against Cincinnati and Air Force, but Harbaugh was sleepwalking through these games. He had his eye on conference play. I would expect Michigan to elevate their game this week. All right, if you guys didn't read it already, go over to sportsbookreview.com Vegas Point Blank. You can't miss it. It's right there on the front page. And it's a really long column. I know you must put a lot of work in this week, Dave. Ton of thoughts on the National Football League and where teams are standing after 2 weeks. Thanks for the time, Dave.
Hey, good luck, everybody.
There's the professor, Dave Malinsky, with us. Mike Cardano joins us next.
Hi, I'm Nando DeFino. Is your lack of time for research making you an unsuccessful daily fantasy sports player? Hey, there's no secret to it. To be successful in daily fantasy sports requires a lot of dedicated time for research. DailyRoto.com's premium MLB service is powered by professional DFS players Drew Dinkmeyer and Mike Leone, two of the premier names in the industry. Look, this is their job. From the time they wake up to the time they fall asleep, Daily Roto's premium MLB analysts are doing the research that's required to be successful in lobbies across the industry. Leverage the hours of analysis the team at DailyRoto.com puts in for their own play to your benefit. Remember, knowledge is power, but obtaining information requires a time commitment that most simply don't have. Hey, I don't. That's why I'm a Daily Roto premium subscriber, although I get mine for free. Gain an edge on your competition tonight by visiting DailyRoto.com/premium and let them put you in a position for success. DailyRoto.com.
Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morenci, and you know what? It just occurred to me. Man, you know, we wanted to start to do our weekly New York State Power Poll as far as who the best teams in the state of New York are. We'll talk about that a little bit, but we'll get the graphics made for next week. I want to track this right now. Who's the best team in the state of New York? And we're going to include New Jersey in this as well with Rutgers. But if you think about it, there's a lot of bad football, man, being played in America's biggest city. The Jets, the Giants, and Rutgers, all within a couple of miles of each other. They're like three of the worst teams in America. You throw in the Buffalo Bulls and the Buffalo Bills. Like, I'm not kidding. Like, you show me a state where football is played more poorly than the state of New York, and I don't know, I'll give you like $100. All right, I'll give one of you $100, but you got to prove it to me. All right, let's bring in Mike Cardano right now. What's up, Mike?
You know, Monmouth University has a team.
Monmouth, how are they doing?
I don't know. I used to coach the field goal kicker. I haven't tracked. I got to find out.
You used to coach the field goal kicker?
Yeah.
I'm assuming you're not very good then.
Yeah, it was a different sport, though. I was coaching them in baseball.
I couldn't help that. Didn't our boy Chris Pavanna go to Monmouth?
He did. He did.
Right, Monmouth have a 2-1-1 record, so that puts them pretty high up on the poll.
That's it. They're the best team.
Think about it, though. So who do we have? Does St. John's have a football team? Like, even like anything? Or you guys just play, like, what do they do? Nothing, huh?
They got rid of it, and there are now dorms where the stadium used to be.
Is there really? So what, there used to be St. John's football?
Yeah, when I was there was football, yeah.
You know, you got at least some of these other. Look at Villanova is playing. They have a decent football program. Yeah, no, all kidding aside, though, like I said, the Buffalo Bulls suck. The Buffalo Bills suck. The New York Jets suck. The New York Giants suck. Rutgers sucks. That's about it for the most part. And which leads us, our number one team in the state of New York is up there in West Point, the Army.
They actually have a terrific offense. And don't sell Rutgers short. They had a big win this week.
Big win. What, they beat Bishop Gordon? They beat LaSalle High School?
I don't know. It was like 49-0, though, wasn't it?
Who did Rutgers play, Warman? I should know this, but I don't even think it was a line game. Let me know what Rutgers played. All right. So Giants lose. I said this to you last week, Mike. Who'd they play? Oh, Morgan State. Yeah. Morgan State. That doesn't count, Mike. Morgan State. Like I said, they played a high school team. So
come on, those guys have parents.
Yeah, it's like, come on, man. It was a fair game. They had helmets on. They had shoes. The New York Giants and the New York Jets, I maintain what I said last week. The Giants are a bigger disgrace than the Jets are, Mike. Would you agree with that?
They are because of the expectation. You know, the debate when the season started was, would the Jets be able to win a game? And, you know, the Giants, people are talking about, you know, are they going to be able to get 11 wins again? So from that perspective, absolutely.
11 wins. The Giants are going to be lucky to get 8 wins. And me and Malinsky talked about this earlier. People, and Eli Manning said earlier in the week, don't worry about it. We're going to play well. The offense is going to get on track. I don't know if they can get on track. I don't know if Seattle's offense can get on track. I don't know if the Bengals can get on track. I don't know if the Bills' offense can get on track. I think teams are starting to become what they are. I mean, you know, we're 2 weeks in now. Oh, we're going to flick the switch. Well, you know, it's not like you guys have a ton of new players, all these teams. I think a lot of these teams are just bad.
Some of these offenses just can't block. And if you can't block them, you can't win. You got no shot.
13 teams in the NFL last weekend in week two had a touchdown or less, Mike. 13 teams. Like, that's nearly half the league can't score a damn touchdown.
Well, look at the parity already. I think there's only 3 teams that in the NFC that are 2-0, right? Everybody else is 1-1 or 0-2.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, there's only 5 teams in the NFL right now that are 2-0 against the point spread. And my Buffalo Bills are one of them. My Buffalo Bills are one of them. The Chargers did not cover the point spread this past week. I talked about this with Malinsky a little bit, but it's worthy of bringing up again because, to me, if you're the commissioner of the NFL, like, isn't he embarrassed by this? Isn't he embarrassed by the fact that the USC Trojans had more people at their game than the Rams and the Chargers did combined?
Well, you know, I know in the New York area we have 2 teams, but you can make no. It's really bad. The StubHub Center only holds 27,000, and they couldn't fill that. The published number is 25.
Yeah, 25,381. 25,381. And I got to tell you, if there's 25,381 people there, then I'm going to wake up tomorrow with a full head of hair. Like, as if, man. There's more people in a Toronto Argonaut game at 56,000. Oh, great job, guys, with the shot here. Thanks to SportsCenter, ESPN, we'll give them credit. And look at the USC game. Look at the Rams. That's not 56,000 people at that game. I've been to that stadium. I lived in L.A. There was probably about 30,000 people in the building at the Rams game. It's a freaking debacle. It's an embarrassment. But we can take advantage of it because the Chargers don't have a home field. And the Rams, you know, don't either, essentially. And we can take advantage of this throughout the season. Like, look, this stadium, the L.A. stadium only holds like 92,000 people, guys. Does that look half full to you? That's not half full. Like, it's not, come on, man. They're lying to us. Like the NBA team saying we're all losing money. They're liars.
Trump would say it was full.
Yeah, it's the largest. Yeah, I know. Sean Spicer would say that's the largest crowd ever to witness a football game in LA, period. That's pretty good material.
Crazy stuff.
That's pretty good material, Mike. Like, that's worth a promo right there. All right, so Dolphins and Jets, your New York Jets. These guys are battling. For a team that lost by 25, they put a scare into me. I laid the points. They were in it until that muff punt on their 2-yard line. Historically, over the years, the Jets and the Dolphins have played pretty close games. Mike, what do you make of this one? The bettors like the Jets here. It was 6. It's down to 5.5 now.
Well, you know what? The Jets were not going to win that game no matter what, but it was a completely different game if that punt wasn't muffed, and there was a realistic shot for that 14 to be covered. But you know what? Sooner or later, the Jets get Austin Seferian-Jenkins back this week. Sooner or later, they are going to pick someone off because they're playing hard and they're not giving up. You saw Adams in the secondary giving high-fiving people with 30 seconds left on a tackle.
Yeah,
they're not going to give up. So I don't know that this is the week. What'd you say it was, 5.5?
Yeah, 5.5. You know what? I think the Dolphins win on a last-second field goal. I think the Jets will lose a heartbreaker.
It's hard to see the Jets winning any of these games here, but the Jets are going to be playing people tough, and it wouldn't surprise me. I think, though, 5.5 seems a little too close. I think the Dolphins may cover that.
All right, so you wanted to talk about the Houston Texans, and you said pick on the Houston Texans in DFS. And what did you mean by that? Opposing defenses, in a betting situation, bet against Texan offensive player props. How do you pick on the Texans? What did you mean by that?
DFS, you got to take defenses that going against Houston. that guy, they're Tim Tebow all over again at the moment. He's a wonderful athlete. He has no clue what he's doing. He's going to jam the number one receiver every chance that he gets, whether he's open or not. They've been sacked 13 times already, which is far and away more than anybody else. And a lot of teams are playing poor offense. And the way DFS works is, you know, you just turnovers and sacks is what it's at. They're going to be turning the ball over and getting sacked. You have to attack them that way.
I think you can say that about a lot of offenses in the NFL, though, right now. You know, like you can say that about the Giants. You can say that about the Seahawks. You can say that about the Bills. But, yeah, they're in a tough spot against the Patriots this week.
13 sacks. That's nowhere close to the next team.
Yeah, I know, but 10 of them did come in one game. 10 of them came in one game. Eli's been sacked 8 times.
What's that?
Eli Manning's been sacked 8 times.
13 and 8, it's only 2 games.
I know. There's, well, like I said, Eli's going to get killed too. Watch, I tell you guys, Philadelphia Eagles might sack Eli Manning 6 times, 7 times.
Well, Gabe, you know what? Listen, they've got a week to plan for it. They may have a hard time, but they're not going to have that problem. You can't have a whole week to prepare and leave Flowers out on an island like that again. They're not going to get beat that way next week. They may some other way, but that exact same problem won't be resolved. The NFL teams just don't do that. They'll protect that part.
Yeah, they're going to have to figure something out. But Flowers, it's not new with Flowers. He's been getting lit up for a couple of years now. All right, so Justin Verlander was getting lit up for a little while. People have sort of forgotten about him. Nobody wanted to get on the hook for the big contract next year. People didn't mind him for a rental, but you got to pay him. Like, I think it's $28 million next year. But the Houston Astros decided, you know what, we better do something. And they pulled the trigger on him, and they're certainly glad that they did. He's 3-0 with a 0.98 earned run average in his 3 starts with the Houston Astros.
Gabe, you know, I started to look at him. His 3 starts with the Tigers before the trade were just as dominant, by the way. He did 2 in a row, and just before the trade was announced, I said, there's something to this year. In his last 6 starts, he's lowered his ERA from 4.11 to 3.50 with 54 strikeouts and 42 innings. And that's kind of unheard of at this time of the year after somebody's pitched this many innings. So, you know, I don't know what made me look at him, but I've taken them on the money line all 3 games that he's played. I've taken the Astros, and he's just lights out. And, you know, I don't know if he just smells, but he wants to get back to the World Series, and he finally smells it here. But he's got something going on. There is nobody other than Kluber pitching like he is in Major League Baseball right now.
Yeah, he's pitched 21 innings and 3 starts. He's only given up 2 runs on 10 hits in his 3 starts. And like Mike alluded to, the last 14 starts, so not just the last 3, in his last 14 starts, his earned run average is 1.99. So he has been a little bit of his own. We got to get out of here, Mike, but you like the Red Sox tonight against the Orioles?
I do. Boston 7-1 in Pomerantz's last 8 starts. The best bullpen statistically after the 7th inning. And I think Pomerantz gets it done tonight.
I took Boston last night, and I got fisted. I'm going to go back to the well tonight. Little Pomerantz juice. All right, so give me the Boston Red Sox as well. Thanks, Mike.
All right, take care.
There's Emery. Emery Hunt's going to be joining us next. There's Mike Cardano. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues.
In a sport where going 3 out of 10 will put you in the Hall of Fame, it goes without saying that playing baseball is pretty hard. That's why major leaguers are always looking for any edge that they can get. Daily Fantasy Baseball isn't any different. DailyRoto.com's premium MLB Daily Fantasy Sports service has been cited repeatedly by the world's best players as the service they trust the most for their information edge. Visit DailyRoto.com/premium and enter promo code DAILY for a special discount on all the information that you can handle.
Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morenci. You know what else continues? Us talking football. Let's bring in Emery Hunt right now. FB Game Plan, footballgameplan.com. Emery Hunt. And I got to tell you, man, looking sharp last night on the sidelines. Yeah, I don't know, Emery. You rolled out. Was that your best suit you had last night? Because I was looking pretty good.
Well, you know, I tend to clean up well, and I just try to, you know, keep it fresh for the fans out there.
Is that the same thing you wore at the Emmys the night before? Like, you're doing the red carpet?
I need to continue to step my game up. Seems like I get a lot of likes, man.
You know, it's funny. I own a horse, and I went to a race as an owner, and somebody asked me, what did you wear when you went to the race as an owner? I said, Dante Culpepper Raiders jersey. So I'm like, you didn't wear a suit? I'm like, no, I didn't wear a suit. I wore a Raiders jersey. Like, no, I wore what I wore earlier in the day when I went there. You know, and I tell you, the track that I own a horse, there ain't no Dwayne Lucas in Baffert, right? The owners ain't walking around in suits. Sort of like, more like the Meadowlands, you know what I'm saying? So,
right.
A little sleazier and shadier. But nevertheless, speaking of shady, holy crap, you want some shade. Coach McAdoo, I guess that's what they call him. I guess old guys like me call him thrown under the bus. I guess today's kid said he threw some shade at Eli. But it's very rare that you'll see a coach be so blatantly frustrated and answer like that. You know, the answer is what happened on the 4th-and-2 and with the delay of game penalty. They're down 17-7. I don't need to relive the scenario. You watch a game, you guys, you know. So McAdoo's asked after what happened on the delay of game. And, you know, you figure that the coach should answer, we have to do a better job as a team handling a situation like that. We have to do better as a coaching staff getting the play in, even if it's not true. You know, there's a bunch of answers that are politically correct in that situation. You know, he went right for sloppy quarterback play. And then he was asked, well, how come you didn't call a timeout? And he said, because I have a veteran quarterback that's been in the league forever, and I expect that he was going to snap the ball before the clock expired. You couldn't, like, he couldn't get thrown under the bus more than he did.
Right, and it's unfortunate. I was sitting there reading that and watching that and thinking, out of all that happened in that ball game, this is what you chose to highlight? You call out Eli and not Eric Flowers? So I just thought that was very interesting by Ben McAdoo.
And then after all that, he goes, but this loss is on me. Yeah, that's not what the headline is now, Coach. You're right.
Exactly. You created an entirely new firestorm that you got to deal with all week long until the next game. And that's the unfortunate part, because that game last night, the Giants had so many opportunities to win that ball game, and it wasn't necessarily on Eli. They couldn't get anything going on the ground. Eric Flowers couldn't really block anyone. And Bobby Hart went out, and I think they actually were able to do a little bit better with Justin Pugh at right tackle. But overall, their offensive line was an issue. Defensively, they came ready to play. And even if they wanted to kick the field goal, they were down 10 points. So whether it was touchdown or field goal was the right call anyway. So that delay of game didn't hurt you in the grand scheme of things. That was a bad move by Ben McAdoo.
Yeah, I know. It was just frustrating, though, that they got so close. And now, you know, they can't score a touchdown. But I've seen this for years, and I've talked about this for years. It's what the Giants do. They're a horrible, not red zone. I'd like to call, what do you call, there should be a name for it, Emery. Green. I don't know, is it the green zone, let's say inside the 10?
You know, call it the green zone.
The what zone?
Green zone.
Okay, the green zone, yeah. So, yeah, their green zone is the blunt. That's their problem. They need to work on the other green zone. Less green zone on the Miami boats. But, you know, the Giants have always had a hard time on the 6-yard line, on the 4-yard line. I knew they'd find a way to screw it up. And you're right, it wasn't just Eli. Don't forget, they had a false start penalty right before that that pushed them back. And it was sloppy all around. And I don't know, Eric Flowers isn't suddenly going to get better going into Sunday's game. And one thing, you look at the Philadelphia Eagles, you know, yeah, they have 8 sacks on the season. I think they're ranked 3rd or 4th in the National Football League after 2 games. But, man, they've probably got about a dozen other QB hurts. They terrorized Alex Smith last week. They were all over Kirk Cousins in week 1. The Philadelphia Eagles do a great job of getting after the quarterback. This looks like a bad matchup for the Giants.
Exactly. You took the words right out of my mouth. It's a bad matchup. In the biggest matchup of the game, their defensive line versus the Giants' offensive front. The only saving grace is that the Giants' defense can do a good job of turning the ball over against a guy like Carson Wentz. But the issue is that the Eagles may only need 6 points to win this ball game. So their defense is that good, and the Giants' offensive line is that bad. Now, second game back for Odell Beckham, how much of an impact he can have? he's probably going to be a little bit more utilized this week and not necessarily a decoy like he was last night. So we'll see if their offense can get 13 points. They're going to need at least 13 to 17 points to beat Philadelphia. If they can't get that, they won't win that ball game.
Yeah, and I don't know if they can hold Philadelphia that low either. You know, I like Philadelphia, but the odds makers do as well. You know, the Eagles are 6-point favorites in this game, Emery. That surprised me. You know, division rivals. Basically, the odds makers have just come to a conclusion that this Giant team isn't very good.
Well, here's the issue. I don't think that 6 points is attainable by the Eagles. I think the Giants can make this a 3-point game. So I would say take the Giants in the points in this one because you have to look on the other side. Their offense, the Eagles' offense, can you trust Carson Wentz to drive the football consistently against a defense that does a great job in picking off passes, a defense that does a great job in applying pressure against a guy that tends to hold the football a little bit too long and doesn't have the best pocket presence? Their offense isn't explosive as was being made out to be, or isn't as thorough and versatile as Detroit. So I think this could be a legit 17-14 game that can go either way.
The Dallas Cowboys got drilled in the Mile High City, and that's the first real loss for Dak Prescott and Elliott and this team. Yeah, they lost the season opener last year. That was Elliott. That was their first game. The expectations weren't high then, and they lost 20-19. The games that they lost late in the season last year were meaningless games to them. The playoff game didn't get blown out. It was part of a learning experience. You know, this is the first time, Emery, that they got punched in the mouth. They got beat up. They got physically beat up. They got mentally broken. And LaDainian Tomlinson called Elliott a quitter. What did you make of LT calling Elliott a quitter? Do you agree with his assessment? And I'm interested to see, you know, are the Cowboys going to pick themselves up off the mat, or are we going to go into a little bit of drama for the next couple of weeks with this Cowboys team? But starting with the LT stuff, what'd you make of that? Pretty strong words.
Yeah, it is pretty strong words. I can't say, you know, speaking to whether or not he's a quitter or not, I wasn't out there on the field with them. That's why I found it odd that LT made those comments, because people made the same comments about him in that AFC Championship game where Philip Rivers was out there playing with a torn ACL and was leading his team against New England, and LT tended to sit that one out. So it's tough for me to say that, but on the flip side, to answer your second question, I look at the fact that Dallas did get punched in the mouth. What was more shocking to me was that run defense, which was stout last year, quietly got punched in the mouth. I do like the matchup this week. Yes, they face another tough secondary, but they don't face a team that can line up and run downhill. So I think the Cowboys will win this one outright.
That's a good point for you, Ray. The Cowboys have a raw secondary, but they're fast. They have speed. And if you know, it's a good point. They might have problems with teams that can run the ball down their throat, and it just sets up the play action and leaves them more vulnerable, as opposed to them knowing we can just play a zone, fly around, and attack the football. All right, we've only got about a minute. We got 1 minute here. Lions are now 2-0. Give them credit. You know, they're making plays right now. Lions are 2-0. They take on a 2-0 Falcon team. I like the Falcons here, though. I'll tell you what, I've been around a long time. I can't recall the Detroit Lions ever winning 3 games in a row off the top of my head.
Well, this is going to be a good game because I think the Lions are built the same way the Giants are, except they can run the football. And I think that will have to be the difference in this one. I love their secondary. I love what Terrell Austin did in that ball game against New York. They essentially stayed in two-man the entire game, cover two, man coverage, and challenged the Giants to make plays one-on-one. Now, they can't do that against Julio Jones in that Falcons passing game, so it will be a challenge defensively to see how they play coverage. That's why I like the Falcons to win this one, although that Lions offense could shock Atlanta and put points up on the board.
Emery, always a pleasure, my man. And send me a tweet with your Taylor's hookup, because you were looking sharp last night. Keep up the great work. Thanks for the time.
Appreciate that, Gabe, always.
Right, there's Emery Hunt with his great stuff. With Emery, we'll come back with something else that's great all the time. My picks.
DailyRoto.com's PGA premium golf product will change the way you think about fantasy golf. Their statisticians have developed a revolutionary approach to golf analytics, giving you access to proprietary stats plus a forecast of each golfer's weekly performance. For each tournament, you'll see a player's projected fantasy points and his chances to make the cut, along with visualizations to help you decide who to roster and who to fade. Unlock the winning edge in daily fantasy golf at DailyRoto.com/premium. enter promo code DAILY for a special discount.
All right, it's time for our plays of the day. Let's start off in the National League Central with the Milwaukee Brewers. Brewers have had an interesting season this year. Really surprised everybody. Then reality caught up to them. People thought that they would fade, but they haven't faded. They're battling, and I think they can get it done this evening. They won last night against Pittsburgh. No reason they can't get it done this evening. Last night I gave you the Red Sox. My bad. I don't know, man. Every time I bet on Doug Fister, I end up getting the one that's getting fisted. And, you know, what can I tell you? The guys pitch well until I bet on them. Give me the Red Sox here this evening, though. Rangers and Mariners. Rangers, a little bit of a free fall here. Seattle's still battling. I like the spot tonight for the Mariners. And finally, in closing, I don't know. The number's too short for the Indians here. Give me the Tribe. May the winners be yours.